even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We observe today not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
The Human Zoo, where they don't hide away the sick animals.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Stand to attention when I'm talking to you!
On Talk Radio.
Dismiss!
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. We're in the midst of a cold snap. Parts of the country have even had their first snowfall of winter. But there's nothing chillier at the moment than the diplomatic relations between the UK government and the United Arab Emirates. This morning, British PhD student Matthew Hedges is currently languishing in a Dubai prison, having been sentenced to a life term for spying. The Essex native might have been naive to think that doing a thesis on military security inside the UAE after the Arab Spring. But he surely doesn't deserve such harsh treatment. On the other hand, calls for diplomatic ties to be severed and sanctions imposed by Jeremy Hunt, the Foreign Secretary, are surely way over the top as well. Why should we expect every other nation in the world to do what we tell them? Why should we expect every other government to behave as we do in the West? And what on earth gives us the right to dictate domestic policy to sovereign states around the globe? We'll be talking to Crispin Blunt, Chairman of the Commons Foreign Relations Committee, who's demanding an end to military cooperation between the countries. 0344 499 1000 here in the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. We will do our level best to bring some calm and some kind of solution to this particular problem. Coming up later on in the show, we'll also be attempting to bring peace to the roads after the powers that be have decided it's a great idea for cyclists to spy on motorists and submit their helmet cam footage to get them tickets and fines for parking in cycle lanes and for driving badly. Has the world gone mad? 0344 499 1000 plus. We'll be joining the fight to save Bungle the dog, who's a lovely little puppy who's been caged for no apparent reason. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, there's nothing quite like the Daily Mail getting itself into high dudgeon about all manner of things that go on around the world. It's taken a slight change in pace lately since the new editor, Geordie Gregg, has taken over from Paul Dacre. The headline on page 5 of the Daily Mail reads this: how could this brilliant British student be locked up for life by a kangaroo court in just 5 minutes? Well, it's a very simple answer to that. The kangaroo court in question is in the United Arab Emirates in Dubai, a place where British citizenship means absolutely nothing. It is a country which is not governed by British laws. It is a country which is governed by its own laws, and it is a country which is perfectly enabled and possible to make their own decisions for themselves. Now, this is not a happy situation. Clearly, Mr. Hedges is suffering from depression. He doesn't deserve to be locked up for life. However, I think we really need to take a step back from where we are right now and say to ourselves and to each other and to our government, we can't go around the world dictating policy to people. We can't go around the world telling them how to treat our citizens. Let's face it, we've still got diplomatic relations with Saudi Arabia, who, by the way, have more or less admitted to murdering a journalist from the Washington Post in one of their embassies in Turkey. So the idea that we're going to break off diplomatic relations with the UAE seems to me to be a nonsense. Let's talk, though, to Crispin Blunt, MP. He is, of course, a man that knows an awful lot about this situation. He's calling for an end to military cooperation between the countries. He's chairman of the Commons Foreign Relations Committee. Mr. Blunt, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning, Mike. I was chairman in the last parliament between 2015 and 2017, just for full clarity.
Oh, my apologies. I can only tell you that I will now be sacking all the people that work with me who give me the wrong information.
Well, I sincerely hope you don't.
No, of course.
Well, Independent Republic,
well, you wouldn't want to break off... Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't want to break off diplomatic relations with the Independent Republic. But, you know, do you get my... I mean, obviously, it's a serious situation, and I certainly don't wish to see a fellow Briton incarcerated in what would appear to be a rather kind of offhand way. However, do you see what I'm saying? That, you know, why should we expect other nations to behave as we do when we quite clearly know that they don't?
Well, that was why I was careful about trying to identify the appropriate sanction here.
Right.
And the mutual defence agreement between ourselves and the UAE, initially negotiated by Michael Portillo back in 1996, struck me as and then reinforced by David Cameron when he was Prime Minister, struck me as the appropriate signal to send of just how horrified we are by the treatment of Matthew Hedges. It is really, really disgraceful that someone who has gone to do a piece of independent academic work, and if you read, I'm sitting actually right in front of me is a previous paper he wrote for the Middle East Policy Council, a very scholarly study of the role of the Muslim Brotherhood and the policy of all the GCC countries towards it, a very independent piece of analysis, no hint of making a case one way or the other, that he should be treated in this utterly appalling way. And he was treated appallingly and has been treated appallingly. Yeah. And the sentence is honestly the culmination of a really quite disgraceful episode. When it needs the intervention of the Foreign Secretary to get a British citizen a mattress, having been in solitary confinement for 3 months where he's been on some kind of drug regime as well, and then you know things have come to a pretty pass in a relationship with a country with whom we have a mutual defence arrangement.
Indeed. But we also have a mutual... But Crispin, we also have a mutual defence arrangement with Saudi Arabia, which doesn't appear
to have been... We do not have a treaty with Saudi Arabia in the way that we do.
No, but we have a mutual relationship with them. We sell them arms, we sell them expertise, we sell them advice, we sell them diplomatic relations, we sell them all manner of things, and they've been busy killing people in their own embassy.
What we're dealing with here, and we can get a discussion of the shocking and disgraceful murder of Jamal Khashoggi, and what I believe is the only way out for Saudi Arabia out of that the position that they found themselves in. But here we're talking about a British citizen, a British doctoral student, doing a thoroughly respectable and useful piece of work around the foreign policy of the UAE. There is no record of him taking a view one way or the other on the decent piece of academic analysis.
No, of course, Crispin, but you and I are speaking as Western Democrats, right? We are not speaking as people who are part of any government.
But hang on a minute. Our history and that of the UAE are intimately bound up together. The UAE was, if you like, born out of the former British government of the area.
But that makes no difference, surely. That makes no difference, Crispin. This is a place where, except
the affront here is first to academic freedom, then it's to any sense of justice, and finally it is to the United Kingdom itself. Is this how you allow your authorities to behave towards a country that has agreed to defend you if you're attacked?
Yes, indeed it is, because this is how they operate. I mean, I was first in Dubai in 1994 when I went out there to cover the case of two British citizens who had been arrested and imprisoned for committing adultery, right? Now, that wouldn't happen in this country, but it happened there. The guy I went to see in prison just outside of Dubai was sitting in a cell with about 35 other people, which was made for about 10 people, and it was about 140 degrees Fahrenheit in the shade, right? Now, this is not a country which commits any kind of sort of concern for human rights. It doesn't really care about foreign nationals whatsoever. If you're not an Arab in the United Arab Emirates, they don't think you should have any rights. It's as simple as that.
Well, there is a proper there's a discussion to be had about the merits of their laws, and obviously their laws around adultery and other issues such as same-sex relations ought to be brought into the 21st century. However, a British citizen who has a supposed confession beaten out of him in solitary confinement with barely any access to lawyers at all.
Yeah, but sorry, Chris,
is actually in a different position to where people go and commit offences against the laws of the land there. And that's what's happened here. Yeah. And the charge being that you're spying for the United Kingdom, that you're spying for a country that is wedded to your defence and intimately wedded into the history and fabric of your nation, is rightly why the Foreign Secretary is so cross.
Yes, but Crispin, the whole point of this, surely, is that they believe that he was spying. Now, whether or not you and I think that that is an outrageous and ridiculous accusation is not the point. The point is here is a guy, here is a guy who's a PhD student. He knows precisely what he's doing. He's going into a very volatile country, and you can call it any number of things if you like, but politically speaking, it's volatile.
It's not that volatile.
Well, it is.
The United Arab Emirates is pretty stable, and the authorities there have a pretty good handle on the... on their internal situation.
Well, when I say volatile, what I mean is that it is effectively a dictatorship, okay, which is not the same as coming to this country and doing a study. I mean, you wouldn't send somebody to Russia and do the things that Matthew Hedges did in Russia. He would have probably got arrested there. There's a pretty good chance he would have got arrested in China and various other points of the world where democracy is not anything that they're familiar with. They don't like people poking about in their business, and they're perfectly willing, as we've seen, to punish people for doing so.
Well, we need to be slightly careful here with these sweeping statements. There is a very substantial British educational presence in the UAE. There is very substantial professional services, such as law firms, in the UAE. Mm-hmm. Indeed, strange enough, those firms depend on the rule of law. I suppose at the bottom, you're saying, is one of the reasons why London and English law is so universally successful, and why so many international corporations have their contracts adjudicated in London.
There are also plenty of public relations firms based in Washington and London that have representations in Saudi Arabia, and who are still working for the Saudi Arabian government in the world of PR. But that's not, you know, that doesn't mean anything in the end. What it means is that there are people who are willing to do business because it's business with countries which are rather unsavoury. And the fact that we're all getting up in arms because the UAE is very different, and of course it is different from Saudi Arabia up to a point, you know, but the point is they are self-determining as a nation. They are not a democracy, whatever you may say.
Well, then you're right to say they're self-determining as a nation, and this is how to behave. It's going to quite probably have an impact on their relations with the United Kingdom. Now, their relations with the United Kingdom are long and deep and close, to the extent that we are a guarantor of their security. And it might be an idea, if they're a dictatorship and can determine all of these things, that they think twice about treating our citizens and accuse them of spying for the very country that is going to aid them when they need it. It's obviously utterly absurd. It's an utterly absurd conviction anyway. Would the Foreign Secretary be so outraged if, you know, our spies report to him? Do you really think he's one of them?
Well, I've no idea because I'm not in that world, Crispin. I mean, you're more likely to know more about that than I do on the committees that you sit. But, I mean, are you concerned, for example, that the family of Matthew Hedges and his fiancée in particular has had a go at Jeremy Hunt, saying that he was not robust enough in the first place in dealing with this and that it should never have got to this stage?
Well, I think it's an entirely legitimate criticism that the consular services available to Matthew Hedges in the UAE don't appear to have appreciated the gravity of the situation early enough, and I rather hope and anticipate that it won't be a mistake that they repeat. And I agree with her in her criticism. And the whole situation is frankly an utter disaster for the UAE and for UAE British relations. But we're going to have to deal very firmly with this.
Now, apparently staff at Birmingham University are due to vote today on an academic boycott of a £100 million Dubai campus. Now, that tells you all you need to know about why business is at the very forefront of all of this. You know, and I find it rather grubby that we're only concerned, really, with this because of the business aspects of it. Because what the hell is Birmingham University doing with a Dubai campus in the first place?
Well, this
in
is
a country
need,
like that.
This is, well, Mike, this is where we're going to need to get into the complexity of the politics of the Emirates. Because Dubai, as an emirate within the United Arab Emirates, has a rather different set of interests to Abu Dhabi, and the direction on which UAE policies, foreign policy, is being taken, which is led by the Crown Prince of the Emirates, who is from Abu Dhabi.
Well, Abu Dhabi is the capital, isn't it?
Yes, and Abu Dhabi is the emirate with the most oil wealth, so it tends therefore to dominate the external policy of the Emirates. But you only have to read the history indeed written by Matthew Hedges in his excellent article published last year about the relationship between the different Emirates and the Muslim Brotherhood and how the complexity of the state of affairs there. I suspect there's a very different attitude in the Makhtoum family ruling Dubai than there is within the family ruling Abu Dhabi, and that's all part of the complexity of our relationship with the Emirates, and indeed the importance of it, because Dubai is obviously an immensely important international centre.
Well, all I ever see, though, Crispin, is us kind of kowtowing to anything that any emirate does, that any ruling family of one of these countries does, because they've got so much money. It's as simple as that. And now we're all being very, very hypocritical, I think, by sitting around saying, oh, I can't believe they've done that. These people do what the hell they like, Crispin. I mean, that's the point. And surely Mr. Hedges should know that. But Hedges should know that better than anybody, shouldn't he?
I don't think they do. I think if you turn the board around and examine the perspective from the other side, I don't think they quite have the same freedom that you believe they have. The politics of the region and are complex, and the currents that the rulers of the particularly the Gulf countries, who are historically very friendly towards the United Kingdom, have to manage. Are currents that could sweep them away.
Saudi Arabia has been using British arms, amongst others, to bomb the hell out of the Yemen for all sorts of complicated and very complex reasons. I understand that the Iranians are backing the rebels and all of that. However, you know, we do not get all up in arms about that. Well, nobody I've heard in the Houses of Parliament complaining about the Yemen bombings that's been going on and the starvation tactics that are being used.
Well, you haven't been in the same debates I've been in. I can assure you there are an awful lot of people complaining about the conduct of Saudi policy in Yemen. A lot of it.
Well, have you called for an end to military cooperation with them, Crispin?
I've taken a slightly different view, which is supporting the international community's support of the Saudi coalition trying to restore.
So that's a no then.
Yemen in the face of a.
Hang on. So you haven't. You haven't called for an end to military cooperation.
No, I haven't.
You're calling for it now in the face of a Briton who has been put in prison.
I'm calling for a focused attention on the mutual defence treaty that we have with the UAE for that to be considered as a retaliatory measure if Matthew Hedges is not released in the very near future.
And what will be the consequence of your call for that? And what would be the immediate effect if, in fact, it was granted?
I would hope that it would open the minds of the UAE. They've just lost a member of the Permanent Five Security Council who had been treaty-bound to come to their defence.
But what would it mean for this country if we broke off military relations with the UAE?
Well, we have, in terms of our interests in the Gulf, if we needed to move from the bases we have in the UAE, it's quite clear that the Omanis and the Qataris and the Bahrainis, I suspect, we're more than happy to pick up the slack.
OK. Well, Crispin, listen, good luck with it, because, as I said, I do not wish to see a British national being locked up in Dubai. However, I do think we need to be very careful about how we proceed with this. Crispin Blunt, thank you very much indeed. MP, of course, he's calling for an end to military cooperation between the United Arab Emirates and the United Kingdom. He has also just confirmed there to us that he has not called for an end to military cooperation between the United Kingdom and Saudi Arabia, despite the fact that they've murdered a journalist in an embassy and despite the fact that they continue a bombing campaign of innocent civilians in the Yemen. Funny old world, isn't it? This is Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
You can join in the conversation, of course. 0344 499 1000 is the number to get through to Talk Radio. Now, as if the cycle lanes and the cyclists filming the drivers is not bad enough, we've now got a whole load of demonstrations. Climate activists causing serious disruption to rush hour traffic in London. There's going to be a series of what they call swarming roadblocks at several different locations around the capital from about 8 o'clock in the morning at various points between now and Christmas. We're going to talk now to George Barder, who's a spokesman for Extinction Rebellion, which is the organisation responsible for all of this. George, very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on. Now, you call yourselves Extinction Rebellion. Are you talking about the human race's extinction?
Potentially, if we carry on much longer as we are. I mean, it seemed a somewhat a serendipitous event that the big report from World Wildlife Fund came out within 2 days of our campaign starting about the giant extinction crisis across the world, about how much of the rest of life on the planet we've wiped out in the last 40 years. And the headline conclusion was that this is a threat to human civilization on the level of climate change. And I think as many people have woken up to just in the last couple of years, with the sheer kind of cascade of disasters across the world. This is not some problem we can put off for our grandchildren. This is something that's happening across the world to hundreds of millions of people in the form of droughts and floods and typhoons. And all
it was a bit unfair blaming people driving across Lambeth Bridge, though, isn't it, George?
Oh, it's absolutely not their fault. And you know, I personally, and as a movement, absolutely, we do not want to be disrupting people's already busy, stressful lives, especially in an economic environment where people get, you know, people get hit for not being able to make their delivery on time and all the rest of it. We absolutely do not want to be doing this. But the fact of the matter is that government has talked about this issue as if they take our children's future seriously for 25 years. And over that time, not only have they sort of not moved us in the right direction at the speed that the science requires, we have actually amplified the problem. You know, these governments get together every single year and they talk about they take climate change seriously, and the carbon emissions are up 60% over those 25 years. And so
yeah, but carbon emissions are up 60% worldwide, aren't they? They're not up 60% in this country, because we have got a series of units in place, particularly in recent years. And we were just talking, George, about the new cycle lanes and the fact that there's millions and millions of pounds going into helping people to work, go to work more sensibly, to walk rather than to drive cars, to get into bikes rather than pay loads of taxes to drive cars, you know, to not get into diesel cars. There's a fuel tax on flying from this country. You know, there's all kinds of things that have been brought in. So parts of the world are doing better than others.
That's certainly true. The problem is that, I mean, for a start, this government, I mean, George Osborne famously said in 2012, cut the green crap. They couldn't really get away with that until they took the Lib Dems.
Well, now he's cutting down thousands of trees on a daily basis, though, to edit the Evening Standard. So, I mean, he's not a very good example, is he? He's not even in government anymore.
Well, I mean, I think the simple fact of the matter is that our lives are set up in a way not at all, you know, not at all because of what individuals want, but our lives are set up in such a way that most of the things we do are unwittingly contributing to the destruction of the world, the decent, safe, secure world we all want to give to our children. And the point is, I think what we've seen for those 25 years is kind of steps put in place that seem to imply that we're taking this seriously. But the really terrifying thing, and this was really brought out at the beginning of August when a report came out in one of the most respected scientific journals in the world, and it was known as the Hot House Earth Report, and that's about the feedbacks that we have in the climate change system, i.e. elements of this problem that have their own momentum. And so the simple fact is that the geophysics of this mean that we are, I mean, to quote the Secretary General of the UN last month, he said we are careening towards the abyss on climate change.
Right, what's he doing about
absent
it?
Have you
been to the UN?
2020.
Have you been to the... Don't raise your voice, George. Have you been to the UN recently?
I haven't been to the UN.
Right. One of the most wasteful organisations on the planet, right? They've got this massive, old-fashioned skyscraper building in Manhattan. None of the people that work there pay any tax. None of the cars that they drive around did pay any tax. And they don't even pay any parking tickets. I mean, they are an absolute shambles of an organisation that's done nothing for the world apart from, you know, completely and utterly destabilise it.
If we had 2 hours to discuss the deficiencies of the UN, I'd be very happy to get...
Yeah, well, don't quote them as some great sort of arbiter of sense, because they're not.
No. The point is that one of the good things that UN has done in the last 25 years is convene thousands of scientists across the world in the biggest scientific endeavour of all time, from numerous different disciplines. And the simple fact is that we do have a clear picture of what is going on with climate change. And the fact is that our government is reversing the very things that we should be doing more
That's
of.
Not true. Our government isn't, George, but I'll tell you which governments are doing that. The Chinese government is doing it. So what I suggest you do is take your motley collection of characters Lambeth.
What's the Chinese government
is contributing massively to the greenhouse effect, which is a phrase you don't hear anymore, because of the number of coal-fired power stations they're building, the number of airports that they're building, and the number of roads that they're building, because as the country becomes more wealthy, people want more stuff. They want more air conditioning machines, they want more cars, they want more buses, they want more planes, they want more flights out of Shanghai Airport. This is what's happening. So basically in China, that is massively increasing the effect of global warming and climate change. So what you should do is take your motley collection of... take your motley collection of students from South London, take them to Shanghai, take them to Beijing, and lie on the road there and see what happens to you.
You've touched on it. You've touched on a really, really important point here, and that brings me back precisely to why the UK government and the rich world governments generally need to do much more. For a start, the key kind of lie across Europe is that we've basically exported our manufacturing to a large extent to China, and then turn around and call those China's emissions. China, and this is a sort of depressing reflection of what we've been doing in Europe, in the UK certainly in the last 5 years, they are investing £690 billion more pounds in renewable energy between now and 2020. Their last 2 5-year plans have put renewable energy front and centre, and they've brought the price of renewable energy down about 500%, which is why it's really competitive across the world. And so absolutely, China is a very big part of this picture.
But China is not a poor country, George. It's not a poor country. You can't talk about the rich West versus China. China's got more money than we've got. They own all the debt in the United States.
Go online per capita. They are number 80 in terms of wealth per person.
Don't tell me to go online, mate, for God's sake.
They're
a developing country, but they're an incredibly wealthy country. That's the point. They're not just manufacturing stuff and selling it to us. Their country is getting richer. Do you know, for example, in India, as that country gets richer, more and more people can afford air conditioning machines. So they're now getting air conditioning machines, pumping more and more freon into the atmosphere, which is very bad for the climate. However, I don't ever hear people like you complaining about that.
Absolutely.
You'd rather they lived in poverty.
India's per capita emissions are fractional compared to ours and to China's, indeed.
Well, thank God for that, because there's several billion people there living, George. I mean, if they had the same, pumping out the same energy emissions as we do, then obviously they would probably be killing the rest of us and the rest of the planet. But the bottom line is, George...
We have a right to pump out more emissions per person than they do.
What I'm saying to you, George, is that you should go and demonstrate in the places where you should be demonstrating, which is in China, where they have no regard for climate change, where they couldn't give a stuff about the fact that the planet might be dying, and instead you decide, because it's a bit closer to where you live, in some squat in South London, you can lie on the road in Lambeth.
I live in a squat in South London.
Where do you live?
I live in a flat in North London.
Well, I hope you don't use electricity, George, because that's causing the death of the planet.
No, of course we all use electricity. This is not about blaming individuals for a problem. This is about recognising that the powers that be, because as most people know, they are hugely influenced by powerful interests such as the fossil fuel industry.
Yeah, and the cycling industry as well. Have you looked down Blackfriars Road recently?
Change without bringing about anything like what our children require to have a safe and secure future.
Have you got any children, George?
This is not a political football. I do. I have a very beautiful four-year-old.
Good. Well, I'm sure that she will need to be raised and brought up in the correct way, which I'm sure you will tell her does not include lying down in front of cars, which might run over you and kill you.
Well, I mean, he's a he, for what it's worth.
Okay. You're not called Jesse, is he?
What I think he's already understood is that whether it's, women's rights or workers' rights or civil rights or weekends, any of the things we take for granted, unfortunately, the powers that be have never generally kind of offered progressive change at the goodness of their hearts. The powers that be are, the governments are usually influenced by those with power and money until normal people get together and force positive change.
So how do you reckon they got to spend £1 billion on cycle lanes in London? Then who caused them to do that, George?
Oh, no, I think that I'm not saying there aren't really positive steps. I think the sort of tragedy of the world at the moment is that there are so many positive things going on the outside of the central problem, which is that we are still digging up virtually all available fossil fuels across the planet. And we've been taught to basically project this problem onto places like India and China, which of course are a big part of the problem. But one of the main reasons that India isn't moving faster to kind of leapfrog the fossil fuels that we've been burning for 200 years and got rich off, is because we haven't been sharing the technology in the way that we should.
India have got a space program, George. India go into space. They've got plenty of technology. We've shared loads of technology with them.
No, we really haven't. I mean, I suggest to people they can watch Al Gore's Inconvenient sequel movie.
Do you know that An Inconvenient Truth was ruled that it could not be shown in schools because it had so many lies in it by a judge in this country?
You do know that, right? Whatever may be the case about that film, what has become extremely
clear... So you admit that the film has got loads of errors in it then, right?
I'm not going to get into that.
Why don't you want to get into it?
But because this will be a diversion for your listeners.
All right.
Give the impression that there's some doubt.
You know
about
my listeners,
dear. Climate change. There is no, except unless you're Donald Trump, there is no meaningful doubt that climate change is caused by the enormous amount of carbon that we are pumping into the atmosphere. And by the way, it's not just the fossil fuel industry. It's the way we produce our food. I mean, you may want to slag off the UN for inefficiency, but they have done a lot of good scientific work
Really?
Which gives a fairly, a very credible scientific picture of where we actually are.
Uh-huh.
And the reality is we need, to quote the IPCC report that came out recently, into the very concrete and catastrophic differences between a 1.5 degree rise, which we're pretty much committed to anyway, and a 2 degree rise, it makes very, very clear that we cannot afford as a world to go to 2 degrees. And their report said that we need rapid, far-reaching and unprecedented changes to every aspect of our society before 2030.
When's your next jamboree, George?
Palming us off with small changes that look as if we're moving in the right direction. And they've been doing it for 25 years and it just does not match the science
that
our children need us to relate to.
Well, I'm sorry we haven't got time to discuss the hockey stick graph and the fraud committed by several people from the University of East Anglia on the rest of the world. But tell us when your next jamboree is, George, so we can all avoid it.
There are going to be actions here and we hope across the world, and there are lots of signs that is happening. This isn't just about the UK government, but we are determined to force this issue onto the agenda to the point where the government actually have to account for it, because our children...
And if people who are listening to this disagree with me and agree with you, George, can they fund Extinction Rebellion? Can they send you money?
If they like, we're a grassroots organisation. We don't have big funding or anything like that. But the other thing, by the way, of course, even if there was no climate change, tens of millions of children, certainly millions in this country alone, have asthma, and any family that is dealing with that knows that that is a life and death horrible thing, and that is just one of the other consequences of not shifting to renewable energy.
Right. It's funny how nobody had asthma when we were pumping out all sorts of black smoke from our chimneys. But we've got to run, George. George Barder, their spokesperson for Extinction Rebellion. Which he says is a grassroots organisation, not with funding from anybody else. But they do a lot of lying down in the road. You don't want to go anywhere near them if they are doing that, because it's very dangerous. In fact, the police say it will be illegal to try and run through any groups of protesters. But again, the police making a massive issue here and a massive error, I think, by allowing this stuff to go ahead, because people will get tempers frayed and bad things will happen.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
0344 499 1000 is the number. Coming up, we're going to be talking to Mike Ward, a TV critic for the Daily Star and the Daily Express, about I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. First, though, let's go back to the phones, because Dan is in the Cotswolds, wants to talk about climate change. Hello, Dan.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Very well indeed, sir. What would you like to say?
Good. I'm just wondering why it's never mentioned that carbon dioxide is about 0.05% of the Earth's atmosphere and somehow drives all this climate change.
Right. Well, that's a very good question. I'm afraid I can't answer it, but maybe you can.
Well, it doesn't seem to work. It's been proved that carbon dioxide tends to follow temperature as opposed to the other way around, as in the inconvenient truth. You've got the sun, which gives us photons for 8 minutes it takes, and I can feel the sun's warm.
Yeah.
We've just gone through a new solar cycle, and a lot of it's down to sunspot activity.
Mm.
So we're now in a new solar cycle. We're getting the colder temperatures. We're getting the seasons, because the jet streams are where they're supposed to be. And all this is just ignored. They change it. It's global warming. No, it's climate change. They just sort of claim different words, and that we all don't understand. When 97% tell me the science is done, that makes me very nervous.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you totally, Dan, because the problem is, right, that we are confronted by these kind of climate change maniacs, as I call them, with so-called facts, and then they start quoting organisations like the United Nations, which, as I pointed out to George, is a completely discounted and ridiculed organisation as far as most sensible people are concerned.
Yeah, I thought you went very easy on him.
I'm very disturbed that people are saying this to me, I'm going to have to sharpen my game up, I think.
I think when someone throws Trump in at you, if you're a climate denier,
yeah.
It's always denier, like they denied that the Earth went round the sun.
Right.
It's always a denier, and that, you must be, they somehow level you with Trump.
Yes.
Just because you don't believe what they believe.
Right.
But the facts are very simple, and that is that it's solar-driven.
Yeah.
It's all solar driven. You've got a massive amount of energy coming from there. And what these people don't seem to understand when they talk about renewable energy is that the amount of renewable energy, say solar cells, that you would require to perform or give you the same amount of energy as a barrel of oil is about the size of a small town.
Yes. Well, I mean, also for them to say things like, you know, we haven't done enough in this country and the speed at which we are combating climate change is not fast enough. I mean, I can give you any number of examples. I mean, I was on a train up north not long ago and you go through some part of, I think it's Cambridgeshire on the East Coast main line, and there's a massive field which is full of thousands and thousands of solar panels. Now, I don't know what heat that provides for the neighbouring region, probably not very much. Similarly, there are these wind turbines all over the place. There are wind turbines in the middle of the sea. You know, we've got the only fuel tax in the world. If you fly out of any British airport, that you have to pay as a subsidy. We pay subsidies to our electricity and power companies in order to go green. We pay huge amounts of tax on diesel and fuel and every other kind of oil that we have to use for heating our homes. You know, the idea that somehow we are not doing enough is nonsense.
No, it's crazy. The chap next door to me is building a new house and they have to fit some form of renewable energy on a new build.
Right.
So he's got to stick solar cells on his garage opposite.
And I don't have a problem with that, Dan. I just don't want to hear from people who want more that we're not doing enough.
No, I don't have a problem with it, but the guy had to spend $5,000 that he wouldn't have normally spent. Look, the battery capacity that we have today is pretty much we're where the Wright brothers were compared to a 747. The battery technology, in order to be able to hold on to the power that's created by these renewables, is so far ahead of our time, even capacitors, that if they were to introduce this, as they wish to do, it would put us into a low-energy society. Mm. I mean, it is detrimental to where we are as a Western society and a country. It's absolutely crazy.
I
don't know where they get their facts from, because it just seems to be this emotive, no, we're right, you're wrong.
Yes.
I mean, you only have to look at the great global warming swindle, which Channel 4 did before they became terribly woke.
Mm.
And it's real. You've got the guys ex-Greenpeace that are saying, no, this is just transformed. We went into it with the best of intentions when we actually found out that the facts went against the grain of where this movement was going. We left or we were ousted, and it just seems to be, as far as I can see, a trillion-dollar scam. Look, Mike, I'll finish on one thing.
Go on.
The Romans used to wear coal as jewellery. They didn't understand the technology because they didn't have the technology to be... Well, they didn't have the understanding of what was available to them.
Mm.
Humans are extremely resourceful, extremely bright. That Blue Planet thing showed up what we're doing with plastic, and I think everyone agrees that plastic, we need to change.
Yes.
But as for this climate change, it just seems to be, I don't know, an absurdity. It really does.
Well, it's a very fashionable obsession to have, I think. And the idea, unfortunately for me, that it means that it creates an awful lot of tax and an awful lot of income for governments suggests that there's something wrong with it. Dan, I really appreciate your call. Dan in the Cotswolds, thanks very much indeed. Coming up, we're going to talk about a very, very interesting story from a very, very remote island in the Bay of Bengal, North Sentinel Island. It's controlled by India, the Andaman Islands, in fact. An American guy went over there without taking the heed of people who said you mustn't go to this particular island. He went and visited the island, and the indigenous people have now killed him. We're going to find out from Sophie Grigg precisely what that story is all about coming up next on Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1 Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.